Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, May 17th. We have a marathon meeting in front of us today. Before we start, let's have a roll call.
Representative Levy.
I definitely cannot multitask. I am here by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by telephone on this day of taxation.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
And Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. Before I start this meeting, I just want to let everybody know who might be watching this. There are a couple of members of the public who I've heard from. They actually watch our meetings. We're going to do the agenda in the order in which it's posted. We have 9 work sessions today, followed by an informational meeting. For our work sessions, most of these bills will be moving to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures, and you will hear that in the motions as we hear the motions being made. Mr. Alanak, is there anything I need to do before I open the work session on the first bill?
Nope.
Everyone's ready?
You're good to start.
I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2440.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. Yes, House Bill 2440, this is the first of one of several bills that you have up today. That is a 6-year extension of one of your tax credits that are up for their sunset review. So House Bill 2440 is a 6-year sunset extension of the Working Family Household and Dependent Care Credit.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Easton before we start working on this bill? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, I read roughly about 28,000 people a year take advantage of this tax credit. And I'm just wondering, you don't have to provide it now, but since this is going to go to JTAX, what I'd like to see is how that number has changed over time. So is it getting bigger? Is it getting smaller? Is it flat? Kind of what the curve of this usage of this tax credit is over time. So again, not looking for that now, but maybe is when we get the JTAX, it'd be helpful. Thank you.
Absolutely, yeah, Representative Reschke, we do have some of that information and we can make that available and put that together for the review in JCT, absolutely.
Anything else? I'm not seeing any. Representative Pham, you want to make a motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2440 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be re-referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2440 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there discussion? I'm not seeing any hands yet. I'll call for a roll call vote then, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
And Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2440, opening a work session on House Bill 2721.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2721 is a bill that's making a modification to the Workforce Household Independent Care Credit, which was the previous bill you just moved. In House Bill 2721, again, the policy change here is focused primarily on students and looking for ways or expanding the potential use of the tax credit for students that are attending school either full or part-time.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Easton? Representative Rashke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, I looked at the revenue impact statement. It looks like it's a revenue, it's a light statement, is that correct, to get it to JTAX? And then we'll learn more when we get there, is that correct?
Yes, Representative Rashke, in this case, yes, both the revenue and the fiscal statement are light statements to move it, yes.
Any other questions? Any discussion at this point? Rep. Pham, let's have a motion.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2721 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be re-referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2721 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
And Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Thank you. I am closing the work session on House Bill 2721. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2441.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2441 is another six-year sunset extension of an existing tax credit. In this case, it's the University Venture Development Fund tax credit. We do have the paperwork on this one. The fiscal impact in this case is no expected impact, and the revenue impact statement is available on OLIS, and it's about $300,000 to $500,000 per biennium. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Easton? Representative Pham.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2441 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2441 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there discussion? Not seeing any. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2441. Opening a work session on House Bill 2442.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2442, we do have a dash one amendment in this case. And this is a 6-year, with the dash one amendment, it becomes a 6-year extension of an existing tax credit. In this case, it's the additional personal exemption credit that's available to taxpayers that have a severe disability. We do have the fiscal in this case. There is no expected fiscal impact, and the revenue impact is issued with the dash one amendment, and we're expecting about $5 million in revenue loss per year.
Thank you. Committee members, questions for Mr. Easton? And Mr. Easton, just repeat real quickly what the dash one amendment does.
Yes, absolutely, Madam Chair. The dash one amendment just extends the sunset the full 6 years, where the introduced version was only extending the sunset for 4 years. So it is something we got in the after the drafting of the introduced version.
Thank you. Rep. Pham, could we have a motion for the amendment first?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2442.
Vice Chair Pham moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 2442. Is there discussion? I don't see any. Roll call vote on the amendment, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. That motion passes. Could we have another motion now?
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2442 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2442 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there discussion? This is the main bill now. I'm not seeing any. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2442. Opening a work session on House Bill 2444.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2444 is another 6-year sunset extension of an existing tax credit. In this case, it is the tax credit that provides an additional personal exemption credit for taxpayers that have a child with a qualifying disability. Again, this is a 6-year sunset extension. We do have the paperwork. In this case, the fiscal impact was a light payment that we received to move it to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. And then the revenue impact statement, again, for this credit, it's about $5 million per year as well.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Easton? Rep. Pham, could we have another motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2444 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2444 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. House Bill 2444 moves to JCTE. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2444. And now opening a work session on House Bill 2445.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mazen Matic with Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2445. Is the bill that changes the implicit sunset date, which would have been the end of this year for medical marijuana, to an explicit sunset date on a six-year cycle. That's what the bill does. You have for the expenditures, no expenditures, and revenue, we would have light for the transfer to JTEX.
Committee, any questions for Mr. Malik? Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Malik. I did have a question. Is there a revenue impact statement on this, and also, first, is there a revenue impact statement?
Yes, President Pham, the revenue impact that we have in front of you on the system is a light, slightly heavy light kind of thing. and basically, it has the statement about the referral to JTEX, but in the same time in the explanation, it talks about how the impact would be $28 million in the coming biennium, going to $38 million from that point on. That estimate comes from the tax expenditure report, which I also included in the meeting material for your information in case you needed to consult with that. So these are the amounts that you basically are looking at. And I know the number of patients that use this expenditure was asked about before, and that's also in the tax expenditure report as estimated about 23,000 people who use it.
23,000. Thank you.
Representative Reschke, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll wait till the motion is made and then make a point.
All right.
So are you ready for a motion?
Sure. Yeah. Right.
So Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2445 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2445 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Discussion, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to be a courtesy yes on this. I'm going to want to dig a little bit deeper, though, and understand where we're going with medical marijuana cards and medical marijuana. Now that it was initially introduced into Oregon as a way for people to get relief from their pain et cetera. But now that marijuana is available at the retail level to anyone over 21, I'm want to learn a little bit more about whether we should be extending a tax credit for just medical marijuana cardholders. So I'll be a courtesy yes at this time.
Thank you for your comments, Representative. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hesitate to repeat, but Rep. Rushkin articulated some of my own questions about wanting to understand some of the trends now that there have been some changes in policy. Are the number of users or cardholders going up or down? Or I would welcome some more information about the direction looking into the future.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I'm not seeing any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Smith, unfortunately, votes no.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2445. Opening a work session on 2452.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2452 is one more bill that would be a six-year extension of an existing tax credit. In this case, it's relating to the tax credit for physicians in the veterans home. So again, this is a six-year sunset extension. We do have the fiscal impact. There is no expectation of a fiscal impact. And then the revenue impact statement that we're expecting is less than $100,000 per biennium.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Easton? I think it's time for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2452 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2452 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Any discussion? I'm not seeing any hands. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith? Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. And could we call on Representative Smith one more time? Since it's a phone connection, there may be just some delay or something.
Representative Smith?
I think we've lost his connection, Madam Chair. I don't see him in the...
There
he is.
There he is.
He's getting back in.
committee, thank you for being patient. Let's wait just a few seconds to see if we can get this taken care of. Representative Smith, are you with us now?
I am. You are so kind. Thank you, Madam Chair. Without going into too much detail, I'm driving Interstate 84 and I had to call 911 to report a fire. I am an I vote if you need it.
We are voting now on House Bill 2452. So your vote would be aye?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. And are you safe, Representative Smith?
I am. It's just a little rail fire, but boy, it's 7. The wind is, so I wanted to get on it early.
Thank you very much. That completes the vote on House Bill 2452. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2452. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2433.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2433, as drafted, would require the Legislative Revenue Office to study state and local tax systems. It has a relating to taxation clause and is being moved in anticipation of being an omnibus bill for any tax expenditure work done by the committee.
Thank you. Committee members, especially those who are new, do you have any questions about the nature of this bill and the process? I'm not seeing any questions. Let's have a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Let's have a vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Manny, did you get that clearly, or should we ask Representative Smith to repeat?
I didn't get it clearly. I think we should ask for a repetition.
Thank you. Representative Smith, could you state your vote again for us?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, thank you for your patience. I'm a yes. Yes vote.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2433. And opening a work session on our last bill for work sessions, opening the work session on House Bill 3167A.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3167A repeals the sunset of the Predator Damage Control District program and clarifies that there's a dash A3, and that A3 does a few things. It clarifies that the predatory management control includes both lethal and non-lethal methods, and then it adjusts the maximum cap that can be charged on the per flat rate and per acre assessment. And then there's some clarification language. This is a permissive program. It's an opt-in program. And so there is a revenue impact on this bill because this would allow those current districts that are operating to continue to impose those assessments. And they're currently at around $120,000 for the districts that do exist, but the increase in the cap would increase that potential authority to around $513,000 if the full amount of the cap was utilized.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Ms. McGovern? Representative Pham.
Okay. Excuse me, Chair Nathanson. I was having a little trouble with the cursor there. Yes, Ms. McGovern, and thank you, Chair Nathanson. I did have a question about, so the Dash A3 amendments, it requires, can you clarify a little bit more some of the requirements around consideration of non-lethal measures? Again, I didn't quite catch that. Or where does it end? Where does it land at?
Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson, this just the Dash A3 with that clarification in language just specifies that both of those types of activities are included and can be funded by these predator control district programs. And it's possible that one of the sponsors might be able to speak a little more about it, but that's the technical language that's in the bill. And in speaking with the two districts that currently operate that, they hire experts that are trained out of Colorado in these, both there are lethal means, but also these sort of non-harm trapping methods and preservation methods. And then these monies for these predator control districts are also combined with monies from some grant monies from the federal government and some monies from the local governments and the counties. And so these predator control districts don't actually do the predator control management. They hire experts, wildlife management experts that are trained specifically in these different types of methods.
I thank you so much, Ms. McGovern. And if one of the bill sponsors does have clarity around some of the requirements or around the requirement or the consideration of non-lethal measures, that would be great.
Chair Nathanson, I could address that.
Thank you, Rep. Levy.
So we use different types of non-lethal. We'll use what's called flattery. And flattery is a form of flags that are put along fence lines, and they're colored so when the wind blows, they flap and it scares them away. There's noisemakers, which are really, really loud. They have some other things that they use where they would blow up, like, you know, when you drive by car lots and you see this funny guy blinking up and down like that? Well, they have those out in the pastures where they know like cougars and bears and maybe wolves would be, and they will put an air thing there that will fill that up and it'll flop all over and go back down. Sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. That's always their first method of predator control, is to try to scare them away. Their second method is to see if it's a trappable, you know. Always the method is not to harm the predator first, but if the predator continues to come closer and cause physical harm to one of your animals, then it's always lethal take as the last choice.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I can speak to this just a little bit. I sit on the Ag and Natural Resources Committee that heard this bill originally, and there was some discussion there about non-lethal strategies and how they fit into the predator districts. but it hadn't been articulated, although we were told by bill sponsors that districts have always funded both activities. So I took the advantage of pulling together advocates for additional language on the Farm Bureau, and we came up with the language that is included in the amendment. To be clear, that's a restatement of what district proponents articulate is already allowed, but it seemed to be important to at least make that statement in the legislation. To be clear as well, it does not mandate any kind of activity. It does not provide any kind of effort to follow up to see what's being done. I know that some of the advocates preferred language that would have stated that non-lethal approaches be emphasized, prioritized before lethal approaches were used. I am sympathetic to the questions around what that would involve for counties and how they would administer that and how they would make sure that that standard had been met. So I did not put that in the bill. But what we are trying to do is just to articulate out on the very clearly in a transparent way that monies can be used in either strategy.
Any other questions? And we do have time for more discussion also after we start hearing motions. Representative Pham.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And thank you, Rep. Marsh, for that clarification. So I just wanted to make sure I understand what I'm hearing is that it would be difficult to enforce for the counties to enforce any requirements that said non-lethal methods would be considered. It would just be hard for them to track down and it'd just be kind of like a trust thing more than something that could be enforced.
I'm going to step in for just a moment. I think what I'm hearing is not that it's too difficult for non-lethal measures to be considered. It's to be given preference. How would you basically audit the application? How would you ensure in what order someone considered and then tried certain methods? You know, would you be visiting individual properties? How frequently and who would visit and what would that cost and what sort of staff would be required? So I think it's a question of auditing the priority order because being considered is what's being clarified in the amendment that yes, they're funded and considered both types of measures. Representative Levy.
I will tell you, in our district, we employ range riders that work 12 hours on and then they switch, so 24 hours a day. When our sheep or our cattle are within known wolf activity areas, which the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife posts on their Facebook page and on their website, and they notify any farmers or ranchers if they've known that they have known wolf activity within any of our grazing ranges. We have full-time range riders. These are gentlemen that ride on horseback, and they do 12-hour shifts, and their whole purpose is to just ride horses back and forth through, you know, the rangeland or the treed area to keep predators, push them back away from any of our animals, our cows or our sheep, depending on where we're grazing. We also use, like I said, the other stuff, and we also use wildlife services, which is what they're talking about paying, to come out and help scare away. It's always the first thing we do, always. And I would say that everybody I know that's that raises any kind of animal, sheep, goats, or cows, or any of that kind of stuff for production, it's always our first line of defense is to do non-lethal. Because our whole idea is to live with, you know, the predators in a compatible fashion. And a lot of times they want to come down because of the Forested Services, because U.S. Forest Service
has not managed their forestry as well as they could have, which then results in them not being able to find forage in between the trees or small animals that they used to live on. So up until that has become so hard, it's always been really easy to keep them away just by doing the non-lethal methods.
Thank you for the question, and thank you for your responses, Representatives Levy and Marsh. Let's put a motion on the table.
Chair Nathanson, I move the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3167A.
Vice Chair Reschke moves the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3167A. Discussion on this amendment, the dash A3. Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wanted to thank Representative Marsh and kind of both sides getting together and putting this clarifying language into the bill. And so thank you, Representative Marsh, for kind of spearheading that and moving this forward. So thanks.
Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. And thank you. I also want to echo my thanks to Rep. Marsh and everyone else who kind of came to the table to try to figure out some solutions. I do want to ask Rep. Marsh if I noticed some of the advocates mentioned that there are no requirements in the dash A3 amendments for keeping records about how the district money is being spent and for making those records publicly available. Could you talk a little bit about some of the decisions around that, or if there was some reasoning around consideration of that?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Rep. Pham. I can share what I know, and I'm not by no means the expert on this, but we did discuss that, and what we found is that records are, in fact, available. I believe on a county basis, they can be requested. So we were convinced that we didn't need to impose another record-keeping requirement on top of what's already being done.
Thank you.
Rep. Valderrama.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I also just wanted to share my appreciation to Rep. Marsh for putting together the amendment with all of the stakeholders at the table. I would have liked to see it go a little further in the explicit explicit nature of non-lethal methods. And so just wanted to share that here, that would have been my preference. So that's all.
Any other discussion on the motion, which is to adopt an amendment? Rep. Valderrama, did you have any additional comments? Okay. Let's have a vote then on the motion for an amendment.
Representative Levy.
I'm also having problems with my cursor. Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Rep. Reschke, over to you again.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3167A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3167A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Now, this is on the main motion for the bill. Any discussion? Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I think I just wanted to create a little space and time to discuss more. This is a complex subject, and I just wanted to raise some of the voices that we heard about wildlife and the impact on our wildlife species and ecosystems as well. And I guess I feel so much gratitude to Rep. Marsh for trying to wade into this really complex situation. And then at the same time, I'm disappointed that we just kind of repeated what is the existing statute and the existing policy and made it explicit without even at least articulating some stronger policies, even if we can't enforce it. Just the ability to actually articulate our intent, I think would be really powerful. So those are some of my comments.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Let's have a vote. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes no.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes no.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3167A.
And Madam Chair, do you need to assign a carrier or will you be doing that at a later time?
Thank you for reminding me. We've reviewed, there are several chief sponsors of this bill and we'll assign a carrier later. Anything you want to advise on that at this time, Rep. Reschke, or is that?
I think I'd like to visit with the chief sponsors and see who wants to draw the longer straw. So I don't want to make that call right now.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so we're done with the work session on House Bill 3167A for now, and we do recognize there's a responsibility to eventually let LRO know who will be assigned as the carrier. The last thing on our agenda today is an informational meeting. Mr. Alanak, are we ready for the informational meeting?
I think we are, Madam Chair. Just to set it up, the committee has heard a couple of orientations on the senior deferral program. Jamie did that earlier in the session, and she has a matrix just to discuss a number of bills that are before either chamber and to focus on the policies that the committee may like to adopt with the intent or potential intent of drafting a singular amendment into one bill and collapsing it into one bill with a policy that the committee would like to move forward with. So Jamie has a matrix she'd like to discuss.
Great, thank you.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, I'm just gonna pull that up and you can let me know when I'm sharing my screen.
I'm seeing it now.
Great. So Members of the committee, you should also be able to see this on OLIS under our meeting materials. There are a few different policies at play, and so we have both bills on the House side and the Senate side, they all extend the sunset to varying degrees. Those dates would be the date on which the property tax year for which the property would no longer be eligible. So for instance, in House Bill 2454, it would extend the sunset to July 1st, 2028. And what that means is the property tax year starting July 1st, 2028, that property would not be eligible for the senior deferral program for that year or any year after. Assuming that it wasn't extended again. But so some of these are very short extensions, and some of these are longer extensions. And so we have the extension of the sunset, and then we have something else, and I am just going to check. This would be the right now there's a cap on the value. There's several criteria that would allow you to be in the disabled or senior property tax deferral program, and one of those components is a restriction on the value of the property you're trying to enter into the senior deferral program. And that is a large matrix, depending on what county you've lived in and your property resides in, and how long you've lived in your home, for a minimum of 5 years. And we had that. That's one of the slides in the senior deferral property tax orientation, and I can pull that back up if necessary in a minute. But what happens is in some of those counties where this determination of the maximum amount of value of your property to be eligible for the senior deferral program is determined by its relationship to the median price home in your county. And so if you live in a place where property values are low, then that value might be low, and it could be, say, $140,000 or $50,000, and your property is $170,000, and it's determined too valuable to be eligible for the senior deferral program. And what this does is it sets essentially an alternative cap, a threshold, which says it's the greater of those two numbers. So either your county number or the 250,000. So for instance, if you live in Multnomah County and that number is hundreds of thousands of dollars, the greater of those two numbers is going to be whatever the Multnomah County index number is. And I don't have that pulled up just this second, but I can. But if you live in a county where the county median is, say, 120 or 40,000, then the greater of those two numbers would be the 250,000. And so your property that's 170,000 would still be allowed in. So that shows up in both House Bill 2634 with the -2 amendment, and then two of the Senate bills, 18 and 114. Then there's a couple sort of somewhat technical adjustments that show up in all the bills, and those are the adjustment for household income according to the Consumer Price Index. Now, the household income is another component that determines whether you are able to be in the senior deferral program. This just kind of tweaks the CPI that's used. Now, it's always been indexed to inflation, but a few of the bills index it to Western CPI, so it would change from the current U.S. all cities. And then a few of the bills change the CPI escalation to the previous calendar year. And my understanding of that is it aligns with the property tax year, since we assess on January 1st, but then your property tax year is starting 6 months after that. And so using, it's currently written as quote unquote the current calendar year is how the CPI is calculated, but now it's just bringing it back to the previous calendar year. For the bills that include a component which would determine a new alternative minimum, alternative maximum threshold, that $250,000, that just says going forward in our next column, the adjustment for RMV cap on CPI, that just says going forward, that $250,000 will be adjusted for inflation. And then there's a few bills that add some language that would allow the surviving spouse or disabled heir to sort of continue on in the property tax deferral program if they meet some conditions already living in the house, and the house is the property is granted to them. And so we saw some of that in the public hearing for a couple of the senior deferral bills, but that is a slight policy change. But it seems that surviving spouse and disabled heir are situations that have come up, and so that's a component in three of the bills. And then there's two bills that forgive delinquent interest only, not the fees, just the interest. And then there is this last issue, which is that sometimes people don't realize maybe that they might want to or need to take advantage of the senior deferral program until the window has already closed for them to be able to do that. So this now expands that window. You can file between April 15th and December for the property tax year, but there would be a fee assessed, and that fee would be 10% of the property that's enrolled, but it's subject to a minimum of $20 or a maximum of $150 fee. And then that would be escalated. Those caps and minimums for the filing fee would be subject to inflation for years going forward. And so that's just kind of all the policies in play. And of course, nothing is set in stone, but they can be sort of examined. I can leave this up, or I can take it down if you'd like me to, Chair Nathanson.
Since this is available online, mm-hmm. and committee members can look at it if they mm-hmm. have a big enough screen, or if mm-hmm. they're using two different screens, they can look at it. I think I'd prefer to have it down for right now, but mm-hmm. leave it available, please, in case we need to see it again. It's just mm-hmm. nice to have the committee members all in the room together when we're asking questions and talking about something. So, committee members, there are a number of bills all on the same general topic. Any questions for Ms. McGovern about this, either for Ms. McGovern or Mr. Alanak, about how we handle it when there are bills with similar or identical components, or components that may or may not be related to each other, but all on the general topic? You know, should we pass individual bills, push them all into one bill? Which things do you think are preferable? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the chart, and Ms. McGovern, thanks for putting this together. It's really helpful. And I'm just starting to figure out, you know, if I look at House Bill 2634 and the things it does, and versus Senate Bill 709, they're very similar. And so I'm wondering, one of those could go away, and then I think we can whittle this down to one or two bills. And my guess is that they would move. Would they move the J tax, or would they? Or is the plan to then, if we were to move it, to just send it to the floor? I'm trying to figure that out, since it's it's a tax credit. I would expect it to go to JTAX.
Representative Reske, Chair Nathanson, if I could clarify a little bit, and Chris can jump in. I don't know that these would have to go to JTAX. This is actually not a property tax exemption or a credit. It is a unique program in which the Department of Revenue pays the property taxes to the local government on behalf of the property owner for a period of time.
Right. It's a deferral. That's right. And then when the property is sold or the person that qualified, or maybe in this case, a spouse or a child sells the property, then that property tax is due back to the department. Correct. Okay.
That's absolutely correct. Thank you.
And so just so I'm clear again, the county is made whole immediately through the state making the payment, and then the debt or the obligation is back to the state.
Yeah, Rep. Reske, Chair Nathanson, there is a dedicated fund, and so all the monies go in and out of this specific fund, both when they're, you know, collected if upon, you know, somebody dies or sells the property, and when the money is going out. And it is true that the local government are made completely whole immediately. It's as if nothing happened from the local level.
So the bottom line, it doesn't go to another committee, whichever bill or bills we think are the best to move along will go to the House or the Senate.
And I guess then that my question on that is, then we need to coordinate with the Senate so we don't have bills passing in the night and passing the same policy or almost the exact same policy or contradictory policies would be probably the worst case scenario.
Right.
I think Representative Marsh has a question, Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Rep. Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jamie, I have an in-the-weeds question that sort of comes out of our experience of disaster over the past year. What happens if a county, can someone be made ineligible if something horrible happened and a county's median RMV all of a sudden plummeted, like a case of disaster where many properties were destroyed and yours wasn't? You have to have a qualifying RMV to get in, but as I understand it, you have to keep that RMV also qualifying from year to year to year. Is that correct? First of all, I guess that's the first question.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, it's true that you have to be reapproved. There's a recertification process, and I actually don't know the in the weeds question about how often or how the mechanics of how the counties and the Department of Revenue determine that the county value, the county median value for the the benchmark home prices. If the chair would like, we may have somebody here in the room that could speak to that from the Department of Revenue.
That's right. We do have Mr. Shiratori in the room.
Yeah, Chair Nathanson, if you'd like me to address that. Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, State Shiratori, Oregon Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. On recertification, we do the recertification every 2 years. It's required every 3 years. But as to the question about the matrix and the methodology for how often do we update the RMV cap, I'm going to have to go back and get more details for you on that. But I would say that although it's theoretically possible that a lot of damage in a particular area would change the medium RMV in that area. I would have to think that the odds of that having an effect on an individual taxpayer would be pretty low, but I'll go back and check that for you.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Thank you so much, Sadie, and I would agree. I think it's unusual, but it's probably not impossible. Our intention in maintaining that is just to make sure that the family, the individual who's being protected, doesn't spend a lot of money adding value to their home, that they're not, I mean, because once you're in, you should be in, unless your property tax is going to remain stable. We know that it's going to be assessed value plus 3% unless something awful happens that plummets RMVs. So is the intention of that median RMV requirement in an ongoing way just to make sure that someone is not dramatically improving their home?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh. I don't know the original intention of the creating that cap. One possibility is that to make sure that it doesn't that folks don't improve it too much. But another possibility is that it that there wouldn't be some unusual case where somebody with a really elaborate house is in the program, despite meeting all the other criteria. But I don't know the original intent on that. I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for you.
Thank you. I guess my comment is it seems like once we let someone in the program, unless something extraordinary happens, we want them to have the assurance of staying in the program regardless of what happens in their neighborhood.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, can I add a little bit of clarification? Oh.
Yes, please go ahead.
So just Rep. Marsh, kind of to think about the person that once they're in the program, that cap that sort of moves along with them compared to the median house property in their county, that cap moves up for that individual at 10% per year. So it grows. So, you know, I think, in year 17, they're at 160% of the county RMV, for instance.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or discussion today on the information that's been presented? I know you'll probably want to think about it just a little bit before we continue scheduling work sessions or not. We'll check in again on these bills. It's a good time, though, with everyone available. Ms. McGovern, Mr. Shiratori, and Mr. Alanak, in case you have any more questions about how the bills work together or the components of any of the individual bills. I'm not seeing any other hands right now. Am I missing any? Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for me, I probably going to need to spend a little bit of time just kind of focusing on this and kind of looking at the bills themselves to try to see if there's a way to whittle these down to one or maybe two that I'm comfortable with, and then figuring out whether the Senate should move or the House should move. Or so just my only comment is I just need a little bit of time to digest this.
That's great. Thank you. Ms. McGovern, any last comments before we close this informational meeting?
Chair Nathanson, I'll just comment on the combination or overlapping all those policies that are in play, or of course, any other policies that the committee wants. But, we can combine different policies into any of the bills that the committee would like.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Alanak, anything you'd like to add before we close this informational meeting?
No, I think that's it. I would just encourage members to focus on the policies as opposed to worrying about the particular vehicle.
Yep. Good. Okay, I'm closing the informational meeting now on property tax deferral for disabled and senior citizens. I think we've completed our business for the day. Mr. Alanak, anything to add?
No, Madam Chair, you have completed your agenda for the day.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. See you tomorrow. We're adjourned.